Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Which one is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
Never go home, they never go home, they never go home, those boys.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
We had a great chat towards the end of last year with a couple of Limerick hurlers, Kyle Hayes and Tom Morrissey. They came along to one of our end of year shows to tell us all about how they won their county's first All-Ireland in 45 years. The one thing that stood out for me was how chilled out they were about the whole thing. Not so much the winning of these big games, but the preparation for the All-Ireland final. Kyle Hayes told us how he got his standard 8 to 9 hours kip in the night before.
9 hours kip, like.
Tom Morrissey was knocking around his local GAA pitch playing heads and volleys with his mates until 10:30 at night because he was told by the sports psychologist that's what you did before the quarterfinal. You played great. Not so well in the semi-finals. Just go back and... I'm not even sure if he said heads and volleys. He had a Limerick type phrase, crosses, and so I'm assuming it's heads and bodies. So
yeah,
we'll go with it. What I'm saying is, this is not a bunch of lads who trade on their emotions in the build up to these big matches. And yet, can't help thinking of Limerick end up playing Kilkenny in the championship this summer, and there's just a little sliver of space left on John Kiedy's dressing room wall, and he has a couple of thumbtacks handy.
Okay,
access to a printer, good Wi-Fi.
Okay,
he may be tempted to print off Jackie Tyrrell's recent comments. Just if there's a bit of space, just pop him up there. I mean, you're not going to lose anything from it. Maybe try and gain something. This is Monday Second Captains Podcast. Hi, Murph.
Hey there, Owen. What's Jackie Tyrrell gone and bloody well said now?
The lunatic. He's gone and said, when you win in All-Ireland, the confidence it gives you is unbelievable. You just want to stay hurling. You saw Limerick went out to Boston. They cleaned the floor with everyone out there. They were enjoying themselves. It was great to see. They're on a conveyor belt. A lot of good things going on at the moment. But I wouldn't be really getting too carried away by Limerick just yet.
Oh, go on, Jackie.
It's a long year. I don't see them winning the All-Ireland this year. I really don't. They're nearly going too well for me now after two league matches. This is before their win at the weekend. I would be wrapping some of those lads in cotton wool and holding them back. It's a long year. I know we can only analyse what we see in front of us, but I wouldn't be getting too excited just yet. I don't even have them in the... I actually put the word even in there, me, Owen. So I shouldn't be over-egging this.
Okay.
But Jackie says, I don't have them in the top three teams in terms of winning the All-Ireland. I think you have Clare, Galway and Tip. I don't see Kilkenny or Limerick in that bracket at the minute. I don't have them in there. So there you go. Fast forward to yesterday's league match at Nolan Park. Kilkenny 15 points, Limerick 218. A precursor of things to come in the summer? A slap in the face of Kilkenny legend Jackie Tyrrell? Or just a vaguely expected result from one good team against another one not quite as good at the moment? It's for you to decide.
Please, it's too much winning. Yep. We can't take it anymore.
They are winning too much at the moment, yeah.
I don't know about that. Anyone who actually sat down to watch Limerick-Kilkenny yesterday on TG Car could not fail but be extremely impressed and a little intimidated, quite frankly, how good Limerick were. I mean, I know the point that Jackie is making. I mean, I understand where he's coming from, and he's probably surprised at how much his comments have been taken up and ran with by people. But Limerick look really, really good. I'll tell you who's really impressed by Limerick at the moment.
Who?
Frances Murphy.
Oh, really?
My mother keeps texting me, are you watching the Limerick game? They're an awful size.
You should be saving this for Friday, Murph. This is the non-World Service members don't realise we have Francis Murphy's guide to the weekend sport on TV.
Oh, that'll get him rushed into the
memberships rolling in.
Yeah, that should really drive that, all right. Yes, Owen, but I mean, we didn't have one last week because of the player's chair with Richie Sadler, you see.
Okay.
Acclaimed interview with Emma Byrne meant no Francis Murphy's TV guide to the weekend, but I'm sure people were clamouring to hear what she thought of various things in her life.
We'll find out on Friday and a little bit on Monday.
Ooh, yeah.
Bonus for all you World Service members there. Double hit of Francis Murphy. Madigan Clerkin was on hand last week to report those Jackie Tyrrell comments. And former Limerick captain Donal O'Grady is also going to join us today, so that should be good.
Donal! Ryan.
Yeah, him.
Yeah. That's that, him. The Don O'Grady who goes nuts on Live 95 commentaries, not the slightly older, slightly more experienced hurling man, Donal O'Grady, former yes. Cork manager, is also a very good analyst. Some big news from the US over the weekend. Colin Kaepernick and his former teammate Eric Reid settled a complaint of collusion against the NFL. Reid and Kaepernick claimed the league's owners blackballed them because they protested against social injustice by kneeling during the national anthem. Kaepernick had alleged the owners conspired to keep him off the field because of his protests to draw attention to racial inequality, police brutality and social injustice issues. The statement was fairly short on detail. Just said, for the past several months, counsel for Mr. Kaepernick and Mr. Reid have engaged in an ongoing dialogue with representatives of the NFL. As a result of those discussions, the parties have decided to resolve the pending grievances. The resolution of this matter is subject to a confidentiality agreement, so there will be no further comment by any party. Which is a little bit disappointing. Firstly, this is seen as a huge surprise. The New York Times reported that as of last week, Kaepernick's lawyers were still preparing for final hearings, according to their information. So something happened in those intervening days. They got to the nub of a deal. Good for Kaepernick, I guess, to take on the NFL. Well, certainly is like this. But the confidentiality clause is what is a little bit irksome. Well, it just means we won't ever get to hear what the case was, what embarrassing, potentially embarrassing evidence those lawyers for Kaepernick had dug up. You don't, you'd put the NFL in the awkward spot of having to defend their actions or owners coming out, potentially ending up going at war with each other. Mm. That might have been nice to see. Bob Kraft versus, I don't know, Stan Kroenke.
Billionaire
like
against billionaire, and yeah. Hopefully everyone yeah. loses.
And yet again, more to the point, we won't be hearing from Kaepernick on this. For someone who has become the foremost activist in the world of sport, he doesn't say very much. He's rather a quiet guy. Retweets a lot of other people's thoughts. Has all these carefully managed public appearances. The much publicised ad campaign with Nike, obviously. That's the way he's gone about it. But I wouldn't mind hearing more about what he thinks about the conversation that, after all, he started pretty much single-handedly. No better man to get into all this than ESPN's Howard Bryant. You might remember we spoke to Howard last year about his book, The Heritage, Black Athletes, A Divided America, and the Politics of Patriotism. So what he was writing about was the history of athletes activism in America going back to Ali and beyond, how it disappeared in the era of Michael Jordan and Tiger Woods and then returned in this decade, this phenomenon of black sports people speaking up on social matters. Here he is speaking to us on the challenge faced by the likes of LeBron James in the modern climate.
Let's not forget that this is a country of words and it's a country of images. It's a country that does what I refer to as falling in love with the gesture. But it also is a country that sells. It's a country of products. And the question that I was asking in the book as well was, do you get to join the heritage? Do you get to join the pantheon of Ali and Robeson and Jackie simply by wearing a t-shirt or by throwing money at an issue? Those guys risked and lost. They put their careers on the line and advocated for their people at an enormous price. And do you get to be part of that simply by having your corporate machine that has already invested in you do a commercial that makes it seem like they're on the right side of the issues? And I think that's where LeBron has engaged in this, or he's entered this very interesting special space where he is putting more behind it. And one of the issues that I think that's very, it's going to be interesting for him to navigate will be, is it possible to be connected to the rank and file of the people while being a corporate mogul? Can you have both?
Now, Howard was very positive about Colin Kaepernick during that chat, very much had him down as one of those athletes who has risked a lot, not simply making a gesture. But that was before the Nike deal, also before the settlement with the NFL. So we'll see how he feels these developments affect how Kaepernick is viewed, or maybe should be viewed. Now, we've had three rounds of the Hurling League, and sitting proudly atop the Division 1A standings are the All-Ireland champions Limerick, who've won all three of their games, playing the sort of smash-mouth, high-intensity hurling that you wouldn't really expect from a team getting used to their newfound position at the top of the game. Malachy Clerken of the Irish Times is in studio. Hello, Malachy.
Hey, Owen.
And we're joined by former Limerick captain Donal O'Grady. Donal, you're keeping well.
Hello, lads. All good, thank God.
Well, I'm sure it's all good in Limerick. Malachy, what have you made of this start, beating Wexford away, hammering Tipperary, and no big deal, just go to Nolan Park and take care of Kilkenny, move on. Impressed?
I mean, you couldn't but be impressed. Funny, I remember watching the second game was against Tipperary and actually saying to myself, do you know what? I'm not sure I gave this crowd the credit they deserve for winning their All-Ireland last year.
Actually a pretty good hurling team.
Yeah, I don't think you're alone there, Malky, to be honest.
And then I was at a hurling game yesterday in the league. I was in Wexford Park watching Wexford play Tipperary. And I started to think, this is the most Yerra Tazoni the league hurling league I can remember in a long time. Well, God almighty. Now, obviously, the Limerick game was different to a certain extent. But definitely a lot of the exchanges in a lot of these games have been teams finding themselves, teams not killing themselves to find themselves. And I just wonder, are we getting very excited? Like, Limerick have been awesome. They have looked awesome. One of the great things that they have done is to look really, really impressive while bringing in new guys, while not, you know, they're not going out with the same 15 that won the All-Ireland. You know, they're changing it around. They're finding new players. You know, going to Nolan Park yesterday and winning like that without Cian Lynch, without Decky Hannon, without Seamus Flanagan, you know, that's, you can't gainsay that to any great extent. But man, I don't know. I think even more than usual this year, partly because of the no relegation, partly because of the fact that all these teams have got a sense now of what the summer is. The summer is 6 weeks in May and June, and then we, you know, regroup to find out where we are. I just have the sense that this league is even more of a phony war than ever.
Sounds like someone's drinking the Jackie Tyrrell Kool-Aid. Go on, Murphy.
Well, Doddle, what do you make of that? I mean, are people in Limerick ascribing this to sort of, yeah, it's just the league? Or is it actually impossible to watch your team do what Limerick did to Kilkenny yesterday and not get very excited about where you stand in the scheme of things?
Yeah, well, I suppose no help from myself in previous years, but we haven't exactly been in this position before. You know, so it's interesting times. I think I agree with Malachy a lot in the sense that the relegation thing has definitely left managers open to experiment, and obviously falling down to 1B isn't a threat to them anymore. So that edge has slightly gone off it. I would agree with him there. But from Limerick's camp, I would say, like, John Kiely would have all Christmas would have said, we have to get off to a good start here. We cannot leave, I suppose, any dirty engine oil in the tank here, because you know, it can fester, and if we don't hit the heights that we finished on last season, there could be concerns. So for us, it's brilliant. Now, we're probably playing close to April, May hurling in February, from what I can see, and that's my own personal belief in that. But Paul Kinnock is all over this team, and I think the ethos now in the camp and the competition for places, and as men, like he said there, like, you know, we were out Mikey Casey, Declan Hennon, Cian Lynch, Tom Morrissey, Gerard Hegarty, Seamus Flanagan, 6 starters in the All-Ireland final last year. In comes Tom Condon, like an experienced player, man of the match yesterday, given the captain's armband. Shane Dowland, absolutely, like, this fella coming off the bench, he can't be happy. He starts yesterday and led from the front. Robbie Hanley thrown in at the last minute, late change there with Cian Lynch, very impressive centre field. Paddy O'Loughlin, Fitzgibbon Cup final next weekend, so he won't be available for Limerick, solid at wing back. And Barry Murphy, I suppose, set the tone for us with, well, not set the tone, but really inscribed what's good about Limerick at the moment with that classic hook down around the right-hand side and turned over Tommy Walsh, I think it was, and popped it over. So, and Conor Boylan as well coming in, so the mix is great. It's great times for Limerick, but you have to be impressed with the management here. They're very calm. They know that it's a long road ahead.
Yeah,
I don't think we're not getting carried away, but it's just great to see. Like, we've waited so long for a Limerick bunch to take the bull by the horns, if you want to call it that, and that these lads are doing it at the moment.
Yeah, and that's the thing, really, Donal, isn't it? That it's not that Limerick are going out playing the same 15 that won the All-Ireland and, you know, going crazy to try and win this league. The fact of the matter is, they're taking it maybe as seriously as all the other counties, no more, no less. They're making as many changes as everyone else, and it just turns out, actually, the Limerick have a better squad than pretty much everyone else. That's what we're seeing, maybe. That those guys that are coming in, the 6 that you mentioned there, they've blooded a few more besides that in the 2 games beforehand. Mm.
that all those guys have a point to prove, and they're all actually really good hurlers. And as Malachy mentioned as well, maybe that we did underestimate just the depth of quality that this Limerick team has.
Definitely, you can see the depth, and I suppose what's most impressive as well is the guys that are coming in are buying into the game plan, the system that we have. It just seems to be seamless, you know. They're all well clued in, and that's back to the coaching thing again and what's going on, I suppose, after the field and away from match day. But like, yes, it is impressive, but actually John Kiely's job is probably the hardest part, is picking the team now, because all the guys know that if I'm not performing here at 95% 100% to my ability, I'm in danger of being left out. And the boys are picking on form, and they're keeping guys thinking. And look, credit to the lads that are coming in, because they're all putting their hand up. And look, I suppose the hardest job, as I've said, for the management team is actually picking a 15 now, because we have an abundance of riches at the moment. And I suppose, look, long may it continue.
Malachy, you reported Jackie Tyrrell's comments.
I did, yes.
What did you make of them? Specifically, the point he makes that he wouldn't even have Limerick in the top three contenders for the All-Ireland this year.
Yeah,
just report the news, Malachy. You know, that wasn't the time to editorialise, but now you can editorialise with us.
Well, I mean, Murph, this is second captains. Let's bring the people behind the curtain and explain the context in which these.
Okay, good.
This was at the launch of Laker Gael last week. And indeed, Jackie is the subject of the first one, which is on this Wednesday night. And so we were talking to him afterwards about it, and then branching off into other things. The way he sort of said it was very much in the context of, lads, it's February. Like, it was, I think it was last Wednesday, so it was before Valentine's Day, you know, that kind of way. It was literally, right, everybody, let's settle down. I've been through this a bit. I know what February hurling is. I know what summer hurling is, all that kind of stuff. And he, even as he said it, kind of laughed, and he says, oh, Jesus, John Kelly is going to love me saying this. So, I mean, I think he's wrong, but I mean, who am I to say that he's wrong, you know? But personally, they look to be in the top three. But I do totally see what he means. Like, the Munster Championship, are any of us confident of naming the three teams that will get out of the Munster Championship?
No.
Are any of us really confident to stand up and name one that we definitely are sure will get out of it? I don't know.
Well, Limerick would be my one.
It would be your one, but man, I wouldn't
be sticking the house in it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like all these games can come down to, they were so tight last year, a couple of scores each way, and it's all over, and they finish fourth on points difference or whatever, you know. So I wouldn't, like, that championship, that Munster championship, is such a nest of vipers that it doesn't. It may not matter how good you are. That it is entirely possible that they could be finished hurling in July. Look, as I say, they look fantastic at the minute. They really do. And nobody else does, I think, is worth saying. You know, Wexford are second in the table. Wexford are a team that, you know, Davy keeps winning games against teams that they haven't beaten in years. And like yesterday was another one, beat Tipperary yesterday. And it's fantastic for them. And they did it in front of a crowd. But like, they were 8 points down with 25 minutes to go and fought their way back against a Tip team that got a few injuries, that didn't kill themselves in the end game, had Noel McGrath sent off. And like, at the end, Liam Sheedy kind of was going over to the referee, and everybody thought that he was going to go mad at the referee, and he kind of had a big smile and shook his hand and walked away. And you're kind of going, this is not championship stuff, you know? So, as I say, sorry, Limerick are going, they look fantastic, but just nobody else does. You know, everybody else is at the very, very start. I know Limerick are at the very, very start as well, but I just don't know how much you can trust all of this, or how much you can extrapolate from it, I think is the best way to put it.
Did Jackie Tyrrell's comments get much airing in Limerick over the last few days, Donal?
I did hear it a couple of times mentioned, and obviously I'd say the players probably heard a bit of that too, and to be honest, it's a nice little one going into a match to maybe have that in the back of your head. Like, going down to Nolan Park, yes, like, it's great for Limerick. We've been 8 years out of 1A. So to come in and to beat Kilkenny down there comprehensively, I would say, and comfortably, maybe left them back into, we were 13 points up at one stage. But I suppose when you see the Kilkenny fans leaving at 10 minutes to go, you know you won the battle there. But look, for Limerick, I think we're living in the moment, which is great, and we can afford to, because the age profile of the team is so young.
Just going back to the Jackie Tyrrell comments, just for a second, just to tell, maybe give us an insight into how Limerick people feel that their team is actually, you know, thought of outside of the county boundaries. Because I did kind of get the impression last year that people thought Limerick had maxed out on their ability. You know, that it was an amazing, like they won the best All-Ireland Championship ever played. But that it was an unbelievable confluence of just, you know, brilliant manager, players playing to the absolute limit of their ability. And as a result, maybe that there is, you know, still the team is being underestimated a little. I'm trying to think back to like 2013 when Clare won with a young team and everyone was like, oh God, well, they're going to change hurling and, you know, set up a dynasty. No one's talking about Limerick as a dynasty. And as a result, do you think maybe that the team is being underestimated a small bit?
Yeah, well, Jackie's comments, like, to me, what he's saying is the lads had such an intense year last year, and to win the All-Ireland
exactly.
and the high after winning for, you know, for the first time in 45 years, we're not going to be able to keep up that level. Now, especially hurling so well in February, how are we going to keep that going up until August, you know, if we manage to be there? Or that's why he's probably stating we're not in the top three. And, you know, you're always going to have a team that's going to kind of come under the radar this year. I would be looking slightly at Waterford and Galway again now, being in 1B, little focus on them, and they'll spring. But, you know, I can understand where he's coming from, but I do understand that people mightn't. You really do have to be consistent for a number of years before a team will rate, you know. And I suppose we look at Kilkenny when we were, as Limerick men, looking at them and seeing what they did there for 10 years with that great team that they had, the Shefflins, Tommy Walsh's, JJ Delaney's, all these guys. And I suppose, like, it's only now when you see Limerick winning one All-Ireland and what it took, and you see Kilkenny with what they did with their bunch, like, that was absolutely phenomenal. So I think the boys don't want to be seen as one-hit wonders either. And I suppose this year is a big year for Limerick. Can we replicate the consistency and get back to the business end of the championship and be with a shot at winning it? But John Kiely is, like, I suppose that every time I look at Limerick, I kind of get, I might get, are we going too well or not? But I think this fella knows exactly, and he'll taper the whole season that we're fresh for the Munster Championship. And we're definitely in good nick going in, whether it's enough to get out of that, I suppose, famous Munster Championship is another thing.
Yeah, it's funny. In most other sports, I would have thought the team that wins the biggest competition and has a very young squad and doesn't lose any players, really, have they lost any players over over the winter?
No. They Seamus would Hickey,
automatically be at least in the top three. I know we're taking too much from... We're now putting too much store in Jackie Tyrrell's early season comments. He might change his mind come championship time. Yeah. Who knows? But I was interested at the makeup of his top three. Like, he had Clare in there, for example. Mm. It mightn't be in every... I suppose they were close enough to an All-Ireland, to get into an All-Ireland last year.
Clare had just beaten Kilkenny, you got to remember.
Yeah, okay. There's a context. I'm glad we have you in the context here. Who's your top three for the record at the moment?
Oh, Jesus.
The top three contenders.
Limerick... Limerick, Clare, Galway.
Okay,
I guess. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, yeah.
That'll do for me. For now. I do want to pick you up on the point you made about the league and where it's at the moment. Mm. It's kind of a weird thing because the structures changed last year in the championship, and everyone loved it. Well, I think most people did anyway. Munster Championship in particular is amazing now, and it's played on a league basis. Have they managed to somehow defang this competition in deference to what's going on in the championship?
Absolutely.
Well, really, yeah. So league's a bit pointless. Whereas in football, for example, for all the knocks it gets, the league has its moments, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Dublin Kerry last week, for example, whereas the hurling league now seems a bit pointless.
Yeah. Look, the background to it is that the managers were eternally giving out about playing in Division 1A, a six-team division, runoff in whatever it was, 7 weeks, 7, 8 weeks, where everybody had to... You couldn't experiment very much. Everybody had to try and win every game. You couldn't get relegated. Not because you can't win... You can't have a good season from Division 1B. You can. It was more that... That's next year. Mm. So let's say you get relegated from Division 1B. Well, next, or from 1A to 1B, then next year when you're playing in 1A, you can be in the long grass getting ready for the summer. But it's very hard to turn around a season for the start of the summer when you've got relegated in the spring. because, you know, a rot sets in. And if you go back through the teams that were relegated from 1A to 1B, they tended to have really terrible championships.
But surely that's the same any teams that lose most of their games in this year's league, regardless of not being relegated. If you lose all your games, not or most if, of them, you, not, you don't feel too good about yourself.
Not if there's a sort of a general sense with, from everybody that, hey, look, this doesn't really matter. Right. So the thing is, they're
really hyping up the league.
No, yeah. But genuinely, but this is, you can see this from the players, you can hear it from the managers. The leagues are being redrawn for next year, so it's going to be a mix of 1A and 1B. So it's going to be a kind of a, it's not that the best six teams are in 1A, it's that the 12 teams are divided up equally among the two divisions, so as to make the early part of the year not a more leisurely thing, but something so that everybody isn't killing each other just to get. And I think if you look back, say, the year Clare and Waterford went to a league replay and then met each other in the first round of Munster, maybe a fortnight later, I don't know what year that was, 15 maybe. Like, they killed each other to get through to win this league, and like, it was a fantastic thing for Clare or what, I can't even remember who won it.
Whoever lost the championship game won the league. And that's exactly, the only thing I remember, unfortunately.
So there was a real push to basically go, lads, we don't need to be killing each other this early in the year, especially when what the summer then became last year. Like, this summer was such a riot so intense from the very first
game.
Really
early on,
Really, really early on. Even from Dublin Kilkenny on the Saturday, the very first game in the Leinster Championship. It was so intense, and it was week after week, bang, bang, bang. Now, those teams playing four games in whatever it was, 21 days and what have you, that they just could not face doing that in the spring again. Because it was I think they just thought it was too much to ask teams to do in bad conditions. Like, Jesus, that game in Wexford Park yesterday, the wind was howling diagonally across the pitch. The pitch was really sticky. People were getting stuck in it and the balls were getting stuck in it. And so, like, what's the point in killing yourself in that when the summer is what everybody's going to care about?
Okay. Well, the good news is that the summer starts pretty early in terms of the hurling championship. Yeah. So once we get through this league nonsense, we can get on to that. Malachy, thanks a million. Cheers. Donal, great to talk to you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Sport is a great thing, Pádraig, and especially hurling. Our sport, the greatest sport that was ever played by any man. They're getting their reward today, mixed with this brilliant blend of youth, fire and enthusiasm, and so chilled for them. Clare men, rivals of ours all our lives. But you know, the Cranberries go up around Crow Park. Dolores, one of their own, Pádraig. Magic, magic moment for them.
Well, it's a highly emotional...
Oh no, my stomach is burning here, lads, I tell you. Oh dear.
Who's going to win it, guys?
Limerick.
Excuse me?
Dowler! On your fire!
He didn't go to blow the onion bag off the back of the net. He went to place it to the corner.
Limerick are on the brink of a historic breakthrough at Croke Park.
Limerick better wake up here because Galway are back in the game big time.
Cruised into the top of the net. Is there any end to the drama? Is there any end to the drama, Pádraig?
And Galway are within one of Limerick.
It's hard to watch.
Oh, man, I don't know what to say here.
Could he possibly, from 2-3 metres outside his own 45, the greatest sport that was ever played by any man?
That's a massive ask.
If you wanted one man in the history of hurling to hit it for you, you might want it to be Joe Kenning.
I think the long wait is over.
How long is it again to wait?
Well, since 2007.
Well, 1973 is the last time they won.
Limerick have it! Limerick are coming away with it!
Yeah!
Oh, yeah, if the rest of the world only knew about this sport, this is incredible.
Limerick have beaten Galway! Woo! 1973! And today...
A lot of people seem to think Dalo is the star of that audio bed for some reason, but... You got to say, Kennedy's contribution is much underappreciated. Oh,
it really is.
Really knows his stuff.
Correct pronunciation, or prediction rather, first and foremost. That is true. Fair play.
Yep.
Well done, Ken. You called it. Then to get the exact length of the famine wrong by, 34 years? I mean, he's out by quite a way there.
But they were in All-Ireland in 2007, right?
Well, yeah.
So I like the fact that he had done a small bit of reading on it somewhere.
Something had lodged in his crazy brain that 2007, that sounds about right.
Your own top three before we leave the subject?
Galway, yep. Limerick, yep. Tipperary.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah.
I think Clare are lucky to be in that top three of Jackie's for me.
Yeah, I mean, they were 15 points better than Cork on Saturday night and still managed to lose the game. And they do that a lot against Cork.
Yeah.
And listen, I respect Clare. I love Clare. Some of my best friends are from Clare. But not right now. Oh, not right now.
Many of you seem to really enjoy our chat with ESPN's Howard Bryant last August when he spoke to us about his book, The Heritage, Black Athletes, A Divided America, and the Politics of Patriotism. So Howard was the person who sprang to mind immediately when we heard the news that Colin Kaepernick, along with his former teammate Eric Reid, has settled his collusion case with the NFL. Howard, great to have you on the podcast again.
No, it's good to be back. Thank you.
This is an overly simplistic question. Who won?
Well, I think it's an overly simplistic question because it's an overly simplistic answer. I think Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid won overwhelmingly in a landslide or however many different ways you want to call it. I think that it was very clear for a couple of reasons. One, the first reason is that the NFL does not usually settle. The NFL has been notorious, even in concussion lawsuits and head trauma and safety issues, they do not often settle. They do not. They rely on their muscle. They rely on their size. They rely on their influence to really crush opposition and crush the competition. And if you go back, I know it feels like a lifetime ago, but if you go back to 2 years ago when Colin Kaepernick first became a free agent, the rationale for not hiring him, whether it was from fans or from organizations or from punditry and media, was that this was a performance issue, that he simply was not a good enough football player to play. And if you notice, there were many people who said, well, he's a backup. And so they didn't even consider him an NFL starter anymore. And so he wasn't even good enough to be a second or third quarterback on a team. If this is how they felt, if this was the orthodoxy, you would not give someone an estimated $60 to $80 million for not being good enough. In this landscape of analytics and data and evaluation and all the talent evaluators that are out there, if they couldn't prove that he wasn't good enough on performance alone, then you know that they knew they were going to lose in a trial.
Which is fascinating because most of the reports I've been reading, when they quote all the legal experts, those experts would say that these cases are notoriously difficult to prove because trying to prove people have colluded with each other involves tracking down documentation to that effect, whereas usually...
Well, that's right.
Yeah, so I wonder why the NFL, this is maybe the unknowable, why they did settle if these cases are so hard to prove. Was it that they were worried they were going to lose, or were they simply worried that enough embarrassing information might come out over the course of that trial that it would do enough damage?
Well, take your pick. Maybe it's both. Because let's face it, when you have discovery, now you have to do something that professional sports teams and most businesses never want to do, and that's show you what they have, show you communications and conversations that have been protected, that are usually private. So whether you want to say, okay, they were too embarrassed for the world to know how they do business, or that they thought they were simply going to lose, either way, that's a loss. So to me, either way, you lose if that's the reason for settling. And also, if that's your reason for settling, it's not like you settled $6 or $7 million. You settled for $60 to $80 million, if that number is to be believed. And if that's the case, if you look at that dollar amount based on the market, essentially that's starting quarterback money. So it's essentially an admission, even though they will publicly and legally admit nothing. If that dollar amount is accurate, that they recognized he was a starting quarterback in the NFL, they agreed tacitly or implicitly not to hire him, and they ended up paying to avoid court. I don't think it's that complicated on this one, really.
Right, yeah. The idea that he was simply not good enough to be offered a contract by any team of all the many teams in the NFL was always a little bit ridiculous. I think even to the Kaepernick haters out there, they must have known that argument didn't make sense when they looked at the standard of some of the second and third string quarterbacks.
I think that what you have is you have a generation of sports fans, whether it's because of age or because of fantasy football or because of analytics or whatever you want to call it. They think more like general managers. They try to think like they're part of the front office, as if they're trading players on their fantasy team or something. And I think that they started to believe an argument that didn't have a lot of basis in fact, but it's also, I think it's a combination. The Kaepernick haters essentially do not like him. And because they don't like him, they are going to drift toward whatever justification is necessary to reach the conclusion that they're looking for, which is to demonize him. And I think that you're seeing that also in the reaction here. You have many, many people saying, oh, well, you know, I think that, you know, if he took the money, then he sold out. And it's like, well, wait a minute. No, he didn't sell out. Well, how could he, you know, how could he take that money and still want to be in the NFL for what they did to him? And I think what happens is that these are two separate issues. He did not sue the NFL for the right to protest. He sued the NFL for the right to work. Therefore, he's entitled to the compensation they took from him. So therefore, for the people who really don't like him, who are trying to undermine whatever he stood for politically, trying to use this settlement as another way of calling him a mercenary or whatever, it's simply consistent with how a lot of people think these days, which is, I'm going to do whatever it takes to reach the conclusion I want to reach, regardless of the facts.
But, Howard, at the same time, he takes the money now and doesn't say anything about it. There's a confidentiality agreement in this, so not only do we not get to hear any embarrassing secrets of the NFL teams and their owners, we again don't get to hear Colin Kaepernick discuss this at any great length, something that he has never really done, barring the very early days. Are you disappointed with that factor?
Well, that's how it's been. And I think it's always been disappointing. I've never been a huge fan of Colin's tactics. I'm not sure he had a lot of tactics. I think this thing has gone it's the best way to put it. I think it's been two years of real frustration in a lot of ways for a lot of people. But obviously, it's his life and he can do and conduct it in whatever way he sees fit. I was never a fan of it simply because I felt like there was an opportunity to speak on a lot of the issues that he stood for. At the same time, I do think it's important to recognize that there are two different issues going on here. And one was, he felt he had earned the right through his ability and his professionalism and his talent to work in the National Football League. And I don't think he wanted to do anything to jeopardize that. And I think that that's the one part of it that's actually very, very wise. Obviously, from the protest and the political side, you'd like to hear from him because people do look up to him. They do view him as a leader, whether he wants to be a leader or not. But on the money side, on the actual labor employment side, I think this is a huge victory for him.
You alluded to frustrations there, though, over the last couple of years. You mean frustrations of others within the same movement?
Well, I think everybody, yeah. There are people, there are football players who wanted to hear from him. There are football players who wanted to follow him, and then he did not really. Colin Kaepernick has not given an interview, a public, outside of accepting awards, he hasn't given a public interview since January of 2017. So there's a void there. Is it his responsibility? Not really, but it's just a missed opportunity. I think there are fans and people in the political world and in the protest world, in the activism world, that obviously would like to have seen him. His presence could have done a lot on a lot of different issues, and he chose not to engage that way. So he's been sort of a inspirational, symbolic, shadowy figure. And for a lot of people, that's been enough. And to me, it wasn't really enough. But I think for what Colin's done and what he's actually gone through in terms of the sort of attacks on his character and not being good enough to play football and all of these things, I think he handled it in the best way he thought he should.
So you have, your issue is just with his lack of, I don't know if transparency is the right word, just his unwillingness to talk about this more openly, but you don't have any issue with the financial side of things, because the last time we spoke to you, I think the Nike deal happened a few weeks after that, Howard, after we chatted to you about your book and about LeBron and Kaepernick and these kind of modern players who are willing to make stands. He took the money from Nike. He's now taken the money from the NFL. But you think that's fine? It's okay. That's not a sellout for you.
I think those are separate issues as well. I mean, obviously we have to have a lot of critical thinking here because these issues are so complex. I have no problem with Colin Kaepernick taking the money that was denied him by his profession, which is the NFL. That lawsuit money belonged to him. They took his job from him. Just like if somebody took my job from me without cause, this is why we have labor law. This is why we have some sort of restitution. This is what we have in a civilized society. He was unfairly denied the right to work. That money belongs to him. I have no problem with that. The Nike issue was a different issue. To me, what worried me about Nike was the commercialization of the movement, the commercialization of activism and protest and my personal issues with corporations trying to profit from important issues that I find very that shouldn't be commodified, let's put it that way. And that was my issue with and I didn't want him to have the things that he stood for undermined by selling Kaepernick jerseys for $180 when people are getting shot in the street, which is why he started this in the first place.
So did he undo much of his good work with the Nike move, do you think?
Well, I don't think he did, because as you can see, his popularity hasn't gone down with people who still stand by him. I think the issue simply become more and more and more complicated. That's all. I think that you start looking at them with a little bit more skepticism, and rightfully. I think that this is something we're all so desperate to have, and I think we talked about this on the show last time, we're all so desperate to create a narrative for ourselves so this all makes sense. Okay, is Nike the good guy or the bad guy? Is Kaepernick the good guy or the bad guy? And I think what you're seeing is that we're not quite sure. It depends on the issue. It depends on the day sometimes. And I think that that's appropriate, because let's not forget that these corporations are also in business and the players are also in business. I think one thing that's going to be really interesting to watch out for is whether or not Colin is what he does next. I personally would think, why would he want anything to do with the NFL? But then again, maybe he loves the game that much that he's willing to engage with these people who did this to him. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what he does next. Maybe he wants to be in the NFL. Maybe he's going to go somewhere else. Now that the settlement is over, he is free to speak and act and go forward without necessarily having any legal restraints. So to me, I think that the big thing when you're looking at these different complex issues, I think you've got three things. You've got the commercialism side of it, which is the Nike corporation issue. You've got the labor side of it, which is Colin suing the NFL for the right to work. And then you've got the activism issue, which is what do all of these figures and symbols and images do to real issues? How do they affect real issues where people are actually being affected, who are not millionaires, who are not multimillionaires, and who need a little bit of, what's the best way to put it? They think that they need a little bit more attention. And the only way they get attention is when some of these famous people stand up for them.
Kaepernick's lawyer, Mark Geragos, I'm not sure if I've got the pronunciation right there, says that Kaepernick does want to play again. He's been training away this whole time. The Panthers are being mentioned because Eric Reid already plays there, so that would be an obvious port of call perhaps. But he said besides the Panthers, it would not surprise me if Bob Kraft makes a move. For those not familiar, Bob Kraft is the owner of the New England Patriots. That would be a hell of a story, Howard, if he ends up at the most famous franchise of them all, maybe as a successor to Tom Brady.
Yep, absolutely. It's all going to be, and that's why when people say, okay, well, what do you think when this whole thing went down? I said, I think we need a little bit of time. We've got to see what's going to happen. You've got free agency opening in football in a couple of weeks. You've got the draft coming up after that. You've got a little bit of a cooling off period between the NFL owners and Kaepernick. And now he's going to be in news cycle again. He's going to be in play. If they still don't sign him, then this is the NFL's way of saying, we gave you your money for what you thought you were going to play, you were going to make in the time that we did this, but we still don't want you. So what is he going to sue him again? So this chapter is closed and now a new chapter opens. And that new chapter is what is actually the relationship between Colin Kaepernick, the game of football, and the National Football League. So maybe he'll play in the XFL. Maybe he won't play again. I don't know. I think that's why it's really important to see what happens over the next several weeks.
Well, we'll keep an eye on it. Howard, listen, I know you've got spring training to cover there in Arizona, so we better let you go. We appreciate you taking the call. Thanks a million.
Oh, my pleasure. Next time in person, hopefully.
Pervo, that'd be great. Yeah. We'll see you then. Thanks, Howard.
Okay, bye-bye.
The flame hair, truth, Mr. Ken Early.
Mr. Ken Early.
Every so often, I'm on the bus and I suddenly turn around and bite somebody.
John Hayes, I'm talking about, Owen. Yeah. John Hayes. Now, I always thought that was ridiculous.
He had won the victory over himself. He loved Brendan Rodgers.
That's where it goes from. Thanks a lot, Pepe.
Fair to say, anybody could have managed those guys?
No, of course not. Let me show you right now before
you
give
it up. You might well have noticed there has been no Six Nations coverage today. That is because we had a rest weekend, a gap weekend. I don't know what they call it.
10, 9, 5,
yep,
crunch down.
Yeah, it's crunch down time.
Can't do that every week, though.
We're back with a vengeance tomorrow and through the rest of this week. Our analysis will feature in-depth contributions from Stuart Barnes and Owen Redden, among others. Those of you who have listened to Owen Redden on this podcast know he's one of the sharpest analysts around. And Stuart Barnes is always great.
Out-jump them, out-rack them, out-drive them, out-tackle them.
Of course. Well, we did Jim Telfer last week, so yeah. Probably won't get Jim Telfer on again, but who knows. Before the World Cup match against Scotland, I'm sure he'll make an appearance. Be sure to get signed up to the World Service for all our Six Nations coverage on secondcaptains.com. Thanks very much, Murph.
Thank you, Owen.
I've never thrown a petrol bomb. I don't know how heavy they are.
That's
indeed. Well, I mean, that's the sort of cutting edge rugby analysis you can expect.
Yeah.
Stuart Barnes has probably never thrown a petrol bomb either, though, has he?
Not that I know of, no. No, I don't think so.
I hope you're enjoying the tournament.
That's the second time it's gone off. They never go home, those boys.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.